Contra Foundation presents the Contra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Contra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're unearthing a really foundational work. Imagine a text, maybe 2,000 years old, that tells the story of one of history's most important figures, but also shaped how billions understood, well, liberation itself.
You're talking about Ashvaghosha's Life of the Buddha,
correct?
Right? The Buddha Karita.
Exactly. It's this epic Sanskrit poem from around the 1st or 2nd century CE, preserved in the Clay Sanskrit Library. And it's genuinely one of the very first and most influential biographies of Siddhartha Gautama.
Siddhartha, yeah. The prince born, what, 5th or 6th century BCE? Somewhere or other.
Right, who became the Buddha, the awakened one, the founder of, well, a whole way of understanding the world and finding peace that's touched countless lives.
And Ashvaghosha's take is so fascinating because it's doing two things at once. It's like chronicling the events, sure, but it's also diving deep into this incredible inner journey. You know, in a time when spiritual truth was often kept pretty exclusive, here's this prince born into unbelievable luxury who dares to seek freedom from suffering. And not just for himself, right? For everyone.
That's the key point.
So it's not just history. It's part myth, part philosophy, part deeply human story. It still really resonates.
It absolutely does. And it brings up this really gripping question for you listening. What on earth could make someone who has everything, I mean, youth, money, power, family, a whole kingdom waiting for him, just abandon it all for a life of, well, homelessness, uncertainty, even starvation? It just flies in the face of, you know, normal logic. And Ashvaghosha really digs into that paradox.
He really does.
So Ashvaghosha starts with this sense of wonder almost. Siddhartha's birth in Lumbini. It's marked by prophecies. Queen Maya's dream of the white elephant.
Right, this famous dream. It signals something extraordinary is happening.
But then there's tragedy almost immediately. Queen Maya dies just days after his birth.
Yeah, only 7 days later. And he's raised by his aunt, Prajapati, who loved him dearly, of course.
And then comes this crucial moment with the sage Asita.
Oh, yeah, this is pivotal. Asita sees the infant prince, and he smiles first, right? He recognizes the signs this child is destined to be a Buddha, an awakened one.
But then he cries.
Exactly. He weeps because he realizes he's too old. He won't live to hear the Dharma, the profound teachings this child will eventually share. And this prophecy, it completely changes things for King Suddhodana, Siddhartha's father.
How so?
Well, the king wants his son to be a great emperor, a world conqueror, not a spiritual leader. So he becomes desperate to shield Siddhartha from any hint of suffering. He builds these incredible palaces.
It's gilded cage.
That's exactly what it was. Three palaces, one for each season, filled with every imaginable pleasure and beauty. The idea was to completely hide old age, sickness, and death from him. Just total sensory overload, but all positive.
And here's where Ashvaghosha's insight is just brilliant. He suggests that this very protection, this attempt to kind of smother his spiritual potential,
it backfired.
It totally backfired. It actually planted the seeds for his awakening. All that luxury couldn't suppress his naturally contemplative soul.
Not at all. It almost highlighted the emptiness, you know, when everything is supposedly perfect, but something still feels missing. That's powerful. Ashvaghosha shows that sometimes spiritual seeking doesn't come from lack, but from this deep sense that there must be something more, even when you have everything.
So Siddhartha grows up, masters all the royal arts, statecraft, archery, you name it. He excels, but he's detached.
Yeah, there's always this distance. And that story about him meditating under the rose apple tree during the festival.
Oh, right. While everyone else is celebrating, he just slips into this deep meditative state.
And the shadow of the tree supposedly stays fixed over him even as the sun moves. It's like this little miracle, a hint of his inner depth.
His father, still trying to tie him down, arranges his marriage to Princess Yashodhara. Beautiful marriage. They have a son, Rahula.
And that name Rahula, it means fetter or impediment. Yeah, the king literally hoped the child would be a fetter, binding Siddhartha to his worldly duties. But even with a wife and child, Ashvaghosha tells us, Siddhartha felt this growing restlessness, this like inexplicable void.
Which perfectly sets the stage for the next huge turning point, the Forsytes.
The big one.
Despite all the king's efforts, Siddhartha manages to venture out of the palace. And what he sees just changes everything.
Completely. On different trips, he sees an old man, bent and frail. Then a sick person suffering terribly. than a corpse being carried to cremation, things he had never encountered.
Unimaginable before that.
Absolutely. It just shatters his whole reality. He suddenly sees the universality of suffering, dukkha. He realizes this is the fate of everyone, including himself, his family, impermanence, decay, death. It's unavoidable.
But then there's the fourth sight.
Right. The wandering ascetic. Calm, serene, seemingly detached from all this suffering. And that gives him this glimmer of hope. Maybe there is a way out, a path beyond it all. Ashvaghosha describes this intense inner struggle as Siddhartha's whole worldview just crumbles.
And that leads him, inevitably maybe, to the great renunciation.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of the night, he makes this almost unbelievably hard decision. He leaves the palace, leaves his sleeping wife, his baby son, his inheritance, everything.
And Ashvaghosha paints it not as cold detachment, but as this profound act of compassion, a heartbreaking personal sacrifice, yes, but driven by this larger love for all beings caught in suffering.
He cuts his hair, swaps his royal silks for simple rags, sends his horse and charioteer back.
Yeah.
Chooses homelessness for this higher purpose. It's incredibly moving.
It really is. And that kicks off the next phase, 6 years of intense searching. He studies with these famous meditation masters, Alara Kalama and Uddaka Ramaputra.
And he gets good fast, right? Masters their techniques.
Very quickly. But he realizes, you know, their teachings, while deep, don't lead to the final goal. They don't end suffering completely. So he thinks maybe the answer lies in the other extreme.
Extreme asceticism.
Exactly. He pushes his body to the absolute limit, starvation, holding his breath, enduring immense pain. He becomes, like, skeletal.
Thinking this will purify him, somehow burn away the obstacles.
Right. But he eventually sees this isn't it either. It just weakens him, body and mind. It's another dead end. The turning point comes when he accepts a simple offering of milk rice from a village girl, Sujata.
And this is huge. He realizes he needs some physical strength, some balance.
Precisely. He discovers the middle way. Not indulgence, not self-torture, but a balanced path in between. His five ascetic companions are disgusted, though. They see it as giving up, and they leave him.
So he's alone now, but he's found this crucial insight.
Yes, and that leads him to the Bodhi tree. He sits down, makes this powerful vow. I will not get up from this spot until I attain full enlightenment.
And then comes the confrontation with Mara.
Mara, the Lord of Illusion, yeah. Ashvaghosha describes it vividly. Mara sends armies of demons, temptations of pleasure, fear, doubt, everything to shake Siddhartha's resolve. Mara is essentially the personification of all our own inner obstacles.
Attachments, fears, ego.
All of it. But Siddhartha remains completely unmoved, steadfast.
And he doesn't fight fire with fire. Mara's weapons turn into flowers. He meets aggression with boundless compassion.
Exactly. And then, that famous gesture, he simply touches the earth. Calling the earth itself to witness his lifetimes of accumulated virtue, his worthiness to attain enlightenment, Mara is defeated. His illusions vanish.
And as the morning star rises,
he attains perfect enlightenment. All ignorance falls away. He sees the nature of reality, the causes of suffering, the path to its end. He becomes the Buddha, the awakened one.
Just incredible.
And while Ashvaghosha's poem kind of climaxes there, leading into the first teaching at Sarnath, it's important to remember this wasn't the end. He then spent 45 years actively teaching, sharing the path, building the community, the Sangha. That whole period solidified his legacy before his peaceful passing, the Parinirvana.
Okay, so we've traced the journey, the major events, but let's dive into the why and the what.
What?
What was the core philosophy that emerged from all this struggle and awakening? Ashvaghosha isn't just telling a story, right? He's laying out a response to, well, the human condition.
Absolutely. The starting point, as Ashvaghosha shows, is this radical recognition of dukkha, which we translate as suffering, but it's deeper than that, isn't it? It's like this fundamental unsatisfactoriness, this unease that permeates ordinary existence.
Even when things seem okay on the surface.
Exactly. But the revolutionary part isn't just diagnosing the problem. It's realizing it has causes, identifiable causes, and therefore it can cease. It's not hopeless. And that's where the Four Noble Truths come in, born directly from his experience.
You quickly recap those.
Sure. One, the reality of dukkha, of suffering or unsatisfactoriness. Two, its cause, which is fundamentally craving, attachment, aversion, ignorance. Three, the cessation of dukkha nirvana, which is possible. It's the extinguishing of those causes.
Nirvana isn't just disappearing, right? It's described as peace, freedom.
Ultimate peace, yeah. Mm. Freedom from the cycle. And four, the path to that cessation, which is the Eightfold Path, this practical guide covering ethics, mental discipline, wisdom. how to actually live in a way that leads to liberation.
And you mentioned the middle way earlier. That seems crucial too.
Hugely crucial. It's not about being wishy-washy. It's a specific, active path between the extremes of sensual indulgence and harsh self-denial. It applies to everything, finding that skillful balance.
And what about dependent origination? That sounds complex.
Pratityasamutpada. Yeah, it's a deep one. Basically, it's the insight that nothing exists independently. Everything arises in dependence on conditions, our happiness, our suffering, the world around us. It's all interconnected and constantly changing.
So you can't just control everything.
Yeah, peace comes not from trying to force reality to fit our desires, but from understanding this web of causes and conditions and relating to it wisely.
Okay, so that's a philosophical framework. But going back to Siddhartha the man, what truly drove him, according to Ashvaghosha, why endure all that?
Ashvaghosha leaves no doubt. The primary driver was immense compassion, Karuna, a boundless empathy for all living beings trapped in this cycle of suffering. It wasn't about his escape. His renunciation, his whole quest, was an act of love aimed at finding a cure for everyone.
That's a powerful motivation. And how did he handle adversity, the criticism, the challenges, Mara?
With incredible equanimity, you know, wisdom right. And skillful means. Obstacles weren't roadblocks. They were chances to learn, to deepen understanding. He met criticism with reason, violence or aggression with inner peace, loss with an understanding of impermanence.
And Mara.
Steadfastness, mindfulness, nonviolent resistance rooted in that deep compassion, not fighting back, but remaining grounded in his own clarity. It's a profound model for facing our own challenges.
Okay, let's really zero in now. Thinking about that whole journey, can we pinpoint maybe three moments that were absolutely pivotal, where things dramatically shifted for him?
Definitely. I think the first has to be the four sights. So what happened? He goes outside the palace, sees old age, sickness, death, and then the calm ascetic. Things he'd been totally shielded from. Why was it transformative? It just shattered his reality. It presented the fundamental problem suffering, and crucially, the possibility of a solution represented by the ascetic. It lit a fire under him. His old life instantly felt hollow. How it changed him. He went from being a prince, comfortable in his bubble, to an urgent seeker of truth, aware of shared human fragility.
Okay, that's number one. What's next?
Second, the great renunciation. What happened? That midnight departure, leaving his wife, child, kingdom, comfort, everything. Why transformative? This was the physical act that sealed his inner decision. No going back. It severed all ties to his old identity. It was this absolute commitment, a really painful personal sacrifice for a universal goal. How it changed him. He literally traded worldly power for spiritual freedom. He shifted from personal familial love to this vast universal compassion. It was the essential step of letting go.
Makes sense. A point of no return. And the third?
Third has to be the enlightenment under the Bodhi tree. What happened? After overcoming Mara's final assaults, those internal battles against fear, desire, doubt, he entered that profound state and directly perceived the ultimate nature of reality. Why transformative? This was it, the culmination. All questions answered, not intellectually, but through direct knowing. It was the victory over his own mind, the complete cessation of suffering, how it changed him. He wasn't Siddhartha the seeker anymore. He was the Buddha, the awakened one. Free. And because he found the path, it wasn't just for him, it was a path now available to everyone.
Those three moments really capture the arc, don't they? So thinking about his story, his struggles, his breakthroughs, how does this connect to us now? What are the human lessons we can take away?
Oh, so many. I mean, firstly, there's the courage to face uncomfortable truths. We all build our own little calluses, right? Distractions, comforts, things we avoid looking at. Siddhartha's story shows that real growth starts when we actually turn towards the difficult stuff, the realities of life, rather than hiding.
That's a big one. It's easier said than done sometimes.
Absolutely. Then there's the idea that transformation is an inside job, that whole battle with Mara. That's our internal landscape, our attachments, our fears, our ego clinging. Real freedom, the story suggests, comes from changing our minds, our relationship to things, not necessarily trying to control everything outside us.
So the power is internal.
Exactly. And third, questioning extremes. The middle way isn't just about ancient ascetic practices. It's a lesson for today's world, which is often so polarized, right? All or nothing. The Buddha found wisdom in balance, in moderation, in avoiding rigid ideologies. It's about finding that skillful path between the poles.
Very relevant now.
Definitely. Fourth, compassion is the highest motivator. His whole journey was powered by wanting to help others. It's a reminder that maybe our most meaningful actions come from empathy, from connecting with others suffering, not just focusing on ourselves.
Yeah, moving beyond self-interest.
And finally, maybe learning from our failures, those 6 years of harsh asceticism. He realized they were a mistake, a dead end, almost fatal. But recognizing that failure led directly to his biggest insight, the middle way. It shows that mistakes aren't just mistakes, they're data. They teach us, they refine our path if we let them.
Makes him feel very human, actually. He didn't just get it right instantly.
Not at all. He was a human being who, through incredible effort and self-investigation, reached this extraordinary state. It really highlights the potential that exists within all of us.
Okay, as we start to wrap up this deep dive, let's try to distill it down. If you, our listener, could take away just three core insights from Ashvaghosha's telling of the Buddha's life, what would they be?
All right, three takeaways. First, an emotional insight. I'd point to the great renunciation. That image of him leaving his sleeping family, the silence, the weight of that choice, it captures the profound tension between personal love and a larger universal compassion. It's heartbreaking, but it speaks to that universal choice we sometimes face. Choosing difficult growth, a deeper calling, overstaying comfortable, it really hits you on an emotional level.
It really does. Okay, an intellectual one.
An intellectual insight. Definitely the middle way. It's more than just avoiding extremes. It's a sophisticated practical philosophy for navigating complexity. Think about work-life balance, avoiding rigid thinking, finding that sweet spot between indulgence and denial in any area of life. It's radical moderation, not weak compromise. It's about finding what works, what's skillful.
A very practical tool for living. And finally, a universal insight.
A universal insight. I think it's this. Suffering becomes meaningful when it fuels understanding that can benefit others. Siddhartha's own confusion, his pain, his searching weren't just his problems. They became the raw material for discovering universal truths, for developing immense compassion. It tells us that our own struggles, our own difficulties, if we approach them with awareness and a desire to learn, can actually become sources of wisdom, empathy, and service. They don't have to be just burdens. They can be transformative.
That's a really hopeful perspective. So Ashvaghosha's incredible epic, The Buddha Karita, it's like this ancient mirror held up to us, isn't it? It really asks, what is your palace? What comfortable illusions, what convenient narratives are you living inside? And maybe what would it take for you to find the courage to step outside, even just a little, and seek a deeper truth?
Yeah, exactly. The Buddha's example really challenges us. It suggests that maybe our greatest potential, our most profound contributions, don't just come from our easy successes. They might actually emerge from how we navigate our difficulties, how we transform our own suffering into wisdom and compassion for the world. His story isn't just ancient history. It's timeless, practical guidance for anyone right now seeking to live with a bit more wisdom, a bit more compassion, and a deeper sense of purpose.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.